My guest at this time is retired U.S. Army Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, who is now Executive Vice President at the Family Research Council. We want to get his reaction to the U.S. Army reportedly scrapping a planned rule change that would have allowed waivers to circumvent the Army's ban on people with mental illness, including bipolar disorder, depression, self-mutilation, and drug and alcohol abuse. So, what should we make of the Army even considering this, and then ultimately reversing course? And General, thanks very much for being with us.
Hey, I'm glad to be with you. Thank you.
The original report in USA Today that ran a few days ago pointed out that the reason this rule change, according to the initial report, was actually implemented in August without any public notification was that the Army was worried that they weren't going to meet their goal of recruiting 80,000 young people by September of 2018. And so they've decided to look into this area, perhaps expanding the pool from which they can recruit. What's your reaction to the Army going down that road in the first place?
Well, to begin with, we didn't even do this in Vietnam. You know, we had a a huge requirement for soldiers, and the Army didn't do this then. They did lower the standard to where you could have a GED and not a high school education. But this is as low as I think the Army has ever dropped in terms of a lack of focus on readiness and quality people. It's hard to brag that we have the highest quality people that we've ever had in our military, which our Army does regularly, and then look at the fact that we're bringing people in that have a history of self-mutilation. I think this is a reflection, though, of something else, and it is a reflection of 8 years under a commander-in-chief who paid no attention whatsoever to readiness of our military. That's why you're having trouble recruiting, is because moms and dads during that 8 years, when they knew that their son or their daughter had to give up their faith, for example, to come in the military, or had to come in a military that was being used for social experiments, people got turned off to coming into the military. And now we're seeing the results of 8 years of that kind of lack of focus on what was really important, which is readiness and the ability to win wars.
General, the subsequent story from USA Today says that the Army disputed the original story, which reported this policy actually went into effect in August. The Secretary of the Army, the Chief of Staff of the Army, rather, saying it was still being evaluated and hadn't actually been enacted. Based on what you've seen and what you know about the system, what's the likely scenario here?
Well, I don't know what the truth is. I mean, I will take the Chief of Staff of the Army's word for the fact that it's still being studied. But that's disturbing that we're even studying this. Think about what this means. It means that we're going to put guns in the hands of people that may potentially be severely bipolar at the same time that every time there's a shooting in this country, one of the first things we do is go back and look at their psychological history, and we raise Cain here because there's not enough focus on the psychological side of people being able to own weapons. You can't have it both ways, and that's what it sounds like we're trying to do with this situation.
General, I remember a few months ago when the debate was playing out over Trump's decision to reverse the Obama administration policy on transgenders in the armed forces. And I distinctly remember a veteran who has been severely wounded, his name is J.R. Salzman, saying that given his time in theater, he saw plenty of people who had no prior problems with psychological or mental issues get in that environment, and they simply couldn't handle it, and they became a burden on the unit. You've obviously commanded in some very difficult theaters. What is it like to even consider having folks with that type of background, given the intensity and the stress that often comes along with that type of activity?
Well, I can't imagine bringing people in that you know are more likely to have severe mental and psychological and emotional issues. I can't imagine that. Look, combat itself is probably the most stressful thing that a human can do. And it's not just the fear associated with it, but it's the long-term effects of seeing people that you care about die, seeing them being wounded in severe kind of ways, that marks you, and that has an effect on an individual that is different for each individual, but ultimately it becomes a very emotional thing. And to bring people in that are already struggling is just insanity. It makes no sense. I'm disappointed in the leadership of our military. And I must tell you also, I think this is something that our president needs to step in and say, stop this nonsense. We're not going to do this. You know, we'll do whatever we have to do to recruit a professional army, but we're not going to do this nonsense.
In the original story, folks in the Army were confident that they could screen potential recruits and figure out which ones were a danger or a burden to the unit and which ones were not. Do you believe that that's possible?
I believe that the Army leadership is not being entirely objective, and I would say even truthful on that issue. No, I don't think it's possible at all for them to be able to do that. Look, they can't even do it for people that come in that have no history of emotional disorders. Because look at the problem that we're having now with PTSD and with other emotional problems as a result of that. They can't even screen those people out now without bringing people in that already have a history of it. I think that this is nonsense.
In response to the original story, we heard from some vets, and one said this smacked to him as being set up for failure because there's no way for the Army to process this over time when there are so many other things related to readiness to do in order to train and be ready to deploy when the need arises. Would you use that terminology?
Yeah, I would. And look, again, this has been one of my themes here for the last few years, is no decision regarding our military should be made until the question has been asked. How does this impact readiness? Is it a positive? If it's a positive, it's okay to do it. Is it a negative? If it's a negative, it's not all right to do it. And if it's neutral, then it could go either way. In this case, you have to know that this is a negative. And why are we doing this? We are doing this just for numbers. Look, I will tell you, and we've always said this in special operations, I'd rather go into combat with 10 good men that were reliable, that I could trust, than 1,000 that were questionable. And that's exactly where we are right now. We need if it means we have to have a smaller army, then that's what it's going to have to be. But I'll tell you what we can do. We can turn this around. Stop the social experiments, change the rules of engagement where our men and women can go into combat to win, and restore the military budget to where they know that they have the necessary equipment to fight the nation's wars and be victorious.
What do you make of the decision to reverse course here? Do you think it was that they came to the realization that this was a bad idea, or that they were just unprepared for the blowback?
I think they were unprepared for the blowback. I think that, I mean, I'm appalled, and in the, you know, a world that is so transparent today, that you think you could do something like this, and that this is not going to be a major story, and I think that's exactly what's happened. And I think the military, especially the Army, has felt the sting from, you know, what the American public thinks. Look, if you had a son or a daughter that was going in the military, and you knew that they might be in a very stressful combat situation around people that had some questionable emotional problem, would you feel comfortable? Would you be comforted? Would you want your son or daughter to be in that kind of situation? I certainly would not. And look, mental health is a serious issue in this country, and we've got to do all we can. And everybody that has a mental health problem deserves attention, deserves an opportunity to be able to work through that, but that opportunity does not reside in the military. That is the wrong place, because all we're doing is inviting disaster by putting them into probably the worst kind of environment and situation that a human can be in, and that's combat.
Last question before we let you go, sir. What would be telltale signs to you from Secretary Mattis or any of the chiefs of staff from the branches of the military that they're headed back in the direction that you would like to see?
Well, I think that for me, it would be obviously making this policy just a faint memory, and restoring what I think is a focus on readiness. That's where we've gotten off track. Again, no decision should be made unless it enhances readiness. And if it doesn't enhance readiness, then you shouldn't be doing it, social experiments included. So I think that once the Secretary of Defense makes it very clear that we're not going to do these social experiments anymore, we're not going to do anything that doesn't enhance our readiness, we're going to focus on being ready to fight and win the nation's wars. That's what I'm looking for from the Secretary of Defense as well as from the President himself.
General, we'll call time there. As always, sir, thank you for your time and thank you for your insights.
Glad to be with you.
Retired U.S. Army Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, now Executive Vice President at the Family Research Council. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.